sure that you're right on that, and that the people who were identified with the Council on Human Relations were thought of as extremists. And as far as I know, there was not a single crossover from the Council on Human Relations to that Committee of Public Education.
Really?
None that I know of.
Uh-huh.
Personally, since I knew the Mansons, I was very grateful to Nancy for the leadership that she did.
Yes.
And I really don't remember the other names. But I think you're quite correct that that this group of people recognized, in fact, one, that they had important personal stakes in this thing, mm-hmm. apart from any ideology.
Yeah.
And secondly, they were keen enough to recognize that they were not identifying one way or the other.
Right.
And that they were able to step in and provide a modus vivendi that we extremists were able to mount.
The extremists were the ones who said we should obey the court decision.
Right.
Right. What's the way those terms were defined? But it was exhilarating to be in that group of people, to feel that, you know, however small one's role was, that it was really, you were on the right side of history, and you just sort of knew that.
Yes.
It was exhilarating. And I was learning so much all the time, learning about the community, learning about marvelous people, the black community that I got to know that I just wouldn't have gotten to know because of this terrible segregation that our society had. And I told you earlier that I had been reared a non-believer. I didn't go to church. And to me, the white church was the most hypocritical institution there was. I used to hear the most outrageous things when I was a boy going on or coming out of the churches. And they seemed to me to be bastions of segregation and bigotry, and they had no programs for change, no social gospel that I could ever see. So I grew up, really quite scornful. But then when I went to the black church during the Civil Rights Movement, here at Ben Bunn's First Baptist Church, down in Farmville where I first heard Ralph Abernathy preach, well, I thought, this is what Christianity is supposed to be all about. First there was this wonderful spirit of closeness, caring. They talked about Jesus in a very personal sense, and you felt it was somebody who made a difference in their lives. And then they said, and this is what he teaches, let's go out and do it. Well, I'd never heard that. Now, I realized I'd had a sheltered or a provincial upbringing in a small town in the South, but nonetheless, I think it was representative. So I had a whole new world opened up to me through that experience. That is amazing.
I want to go back just a moment.
Yeah.
To speak of and to talk about the university.
And yes.
Its
right.
Response.
Right.
I'm going to start off with a proposition. And
okay.
Then back.
All right.
My proposition is that COVID Darden is the most important, the most contributing, the most helpful Virginian of the 20th century.
All right, I'm going to disagree with that. Oh, okay, I'll agree with that, but let's make clear with whom we're comparing him. Okay, go ahead. You develop the proposition, and I'll tell you.
I think you've got something interesting. I just wanted to start off with
all right.
Because I came eventually to feel, not eventually, I always was a great admirer and respecter of Colgate Darden.
Yeah.
And his role in the opening up of the university, I felt Colgate Darden was, in fact, the politician the way politicians ought to be. He was sensitive.
Uh-huh.
He did have vision, but he realized that the politician no politician is going to be able to make motion unless he's got a majority with him or enough people to believe in who will follow him. And in this particular instance, there after the university was required to desegregate by law.
1950 with the Swanson, Gregory Swanson came, yeah.
Colgate went through all the correct motions in the thing. He was an officer of the Commonwealth, mm-hmm. so he responded negatively to Gregory Swanson's application, but realized that the NAACP did have its legal recourses, which did proceed, mm-hmm. did get Gregory Swanson in, and the barrier was broken.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Colgate's position all the way through, that he was an officer of the Commonwealth. And the place that he did break,
mm-hmm.
the place where he stopped was, he went along with the Great Commission's recommendations. He raised any objections to that. But when the Great Commission was thrown out, Colgate said, this will not do, and he then publicly took the other side. In no very dramatic instance or occasion,
mm-hmm.
but he made it perfectly clear that he was not with the
massive resistors, right? Yeah, well, that's a fair interpretation. It's not mine, and mine may be wrong. I look upon, and I see your argument, and I'll sort of add to it a little bit, and I think it's a fascinating subject. And I wish all of his personal papers hadn't been destroyed, because it's very difficult to write a biography of him.
I didn't know about that.
That's right.
His
personal papers were destroyed.
Intentionally?
Yes.
By accident?
On purpose, by him. And so it's going to be enormously difficult to write his biography. One of my students, Mark Hamer by name, who is doing an honors thesis on Darden this year, and it will be in the library by the end of this year, and I expect it's going to be an excellent work. He will be by to see you, because you're one of the persons I've told him to be sure and go interview. And I've been interested in Darden for a long time. First of all, let's say what I'm going to say about him is mostly what I've learned reading about him and thinking about him since he left. Because he was a president for 2 years, and he was not much of a presence in my life. I mean, I said, how do you do? Both he and his wife were great supporters of maintaining the beauty of this place, and my wife was grateful because they cared about keeping the trees and the ancient landmarks out at Piedmont where we lived. That was mainly what we thought about Darden. And I knew he was the person who not only opened up, who agreed that Gregory would, Swanson would come, but who also had this vision that you didn't mention, but I'm sure you would agree, was maybe his most important contribution to the university, which was to turn it into the capstone of education in Virginia, and to have it cease being, to whatever extent it was, a sort of playground for Ivy League dropouts. And he wanted to make it a more serious institution, a more democratic institution. I'd like to see somebody comment on or study his attitude toward fraternities. My guess is that he probably thought they were not an entirely wholesome influence, but that, as you say, he was a political realist, and he knew that they could not be tampered with, and that one could not succeed in that. So
you remember his gambit, you remember?
No, what?
How he dealt with it. He built Newcomb Hall.
Yes, right. Yes, right, exactly. Just as today, in another sense, another gambit has been to start Monroe College, and if we had a series of colleges, they would be right. You have to do an end run on fraternities. There's no way, so most astute political people would believe. Well, that's another issue, but I think it's closely related. Well, here's my feeling about Mr. Darden. You start off with the famous comment he made to Linwood Holton. When Linwood Holton was governor of Virginia, in the fall of 1970, his children were assigned to, or weren't assigned, but lived in the district. They could have gone to any school they wanted in Richmond since he was governor, but they were in the district of schools that were overwhelmingly black in population. And he and his wife escorted their children to those black schools on the opening day of school as a, to make a profound statement in Virginia and in the South that we support public education, even if public education means whites going to predominantly black schools. And we take our children by the hand and we walk there. And it was a powerful symbol. And Colgate-Darden said to Linwood Holton that that was the most important political happening of 20th century Virginia. And, well, that would indicate that by 1970, he thought that the courageous thing to do was to support integration. Now, let's think about the parallel for a minute, Jack, or I don't know if it's a parallel. Mm-hmm. Linwood Holton sacrificed his political career by doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the truth. He's been persona non grata in the Republican Party ever since then, okay? And yet, and I don't know whether Mr. Darden knew that would happen at the time, but he said, this is the most important political happening in my lifetime. Well, what was Mr. Darden's career like? His career was one, as you say, of figuring what could be done and doing as much as he thought he could do within the limits of his own vision and his own, well, his own vision of what was right and what he wanted to see happen. My point about him is that his vision was really limited. He did not really feel deep down that the Virginia of the future ought to be an integrated Virginia. I mean, I'm persuaded he didn't deeply feel that. Mm. I have a letter. I don't have it. It's in the Southern Regional Council archives. An exchange of letters between him and George Mitchell. George Mitchell was at that time the executive secretary of Southern Regional Council. 1951, the council had just passed a resolution at the annual meeting saying that they found segregation a cruel penalty on the human spirit and that it must be ended in the South. And Darden wrote to Mitchell and he said, I must resign from the Southern Regional Council. I've been a member, but I take it that you are now in favor of integration, and I cannot be in favor of that. And there is a sort of, you can't possibly be, well, you can be, but it's hard for one to be, to judge the man harshly, because he was a man of such deep feeling and caring and integrity. You know, there's not a false note in the man. That's what I like about him. Somebody, there's not a single false note. And he felt very deeply he just didn't think it was going to work.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I was unaware of it.
He did not think it was going to work. And he thought that he cared deeply about the education of blacks. And he thought that their education would be harmed. You know, he was sort of the genuine separate but equal guy. And he also just thought that Virginians, Southerners, would react so harshly that blacks would be abused and humiliated and that there would be ugliness. He predicted, you know, I didn't see a letter in which he predicted these things. I sensed that he foresaw so many of the indignities that came, and he just didn't want to see that. Anyway, this letter says, I take it that the Southern Regional Council is in favor of integration. I cannot favor that. A little bit later, several years later, Benjamin Muse, who was, as you know, worked with the council, had been a wonderful correspondent for the Washington Post, and actually in the 30s had run against Mr. Darden as a Republican on the Republican ticket for governor. Well, Ben Mews was a splendid person, and in 1960 he was traveling around, 59, he was traveling around for the council doing interviews of leaders in the South, confidential interviews,